whether we are to survive with God's hand to guide and lead us, or to perish in the dead existence of a godless world. If these be true, and to me they are, beyond any possibility of challenge, then this has long since ceased to be a fight for freedom for our Korean allies alone and for their national survival. It has become, and it continues to be, a fight for our own freedom, for our own survival in an honorable, independent, national existence. These are the things for which we fight. Never have members of any military command had a greater challenge than we, or a finer opportunity to show ourselves and our people at their best. I would like each commander to convey the substance of this message to every single member of his command and at the earliest practicable moment.
You are listening to Hear It Now, CBS's weekly document for air based on the week's news. The program continues immediately after this pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WDWS AM and FM Champaign-Urbana. They're water repellent, wind resistant, and just what you've been looking for in a smart golf jacket. Look for the label Airmen. It's your best bet for golfing comfort. And Pat Kane's got them in sizes 36 to 46 in navy, maroon, green, yellow, tan, and gray. You like the raglan sleeves, too. Ask for Airman jackets at Pat Kane's, 202 North Neal, Champaign. They're just $5.50.
A full hour review of the week's news, told in the actual recorded voices of the men and women who make the news. Once again, here is the editor of Hear It Now, Edward R. Murrow.
Senator Charles Toby, Republican, New Hampshire, continued to be in the news and was the only running story which could compete with the MacArthur story. On Monday, he was quoted as having said that he had recorded conversations with the president, in which Mr. Truman told him he had evidence that several congressmen had accepted fees for exerting special influence with the RFC. Senator Toby said the president called back later and disclaimed having any such evidence. On Wednesday, Toby told the Senate that the president had called him and asked if he was going to bring impeachment charges against him. Mr. Toby denied this, but said the president didn't believe him. But the senator from New Hampshire was not content just to help solve the problems of the nation. He was also serving some constituents with marital troubles, as he told a Rochester audience.
Into my office some time ago there came a letter, and my secretary, who's been with me now for 24 years, brought it into me and said, "Senator, here's a new one." And I read it. And it read this way: Senator Charles W. Toby, Washington, D.C. Dear Senator, my wife, Louise, has left my bed and board. She's taken the two children with her. I can't imagine why she's gone. I gave her a Ford car, an electric sewing machine, television and radio, everything a woman could want, but she's gone. My burden is this, sir. Will you sit down and write her a good letter and ask her to come back and renew relations as mother and wife in our home? And I scratched my head, and we put our two thoughts together, and we drafted a letter. I signed it and sent it on its way with a wish and a prayer. 10 days later, sitting on the floor of the Senate, just after morning prayers, a page passed me a Western Union telegraph. I slipped the envelope, and I opened it, and my eyes fell upon the text which read as follows: Senator Charles W. Toby, Washington, D.C., she's back! You're some senator! Well, friends, I hope he's just as grateful now as he was then. I can't judge about that.
Throughout the crime hearings, Senator Kefauver and Senator Toby had repeatedly said, this is only a start. Any real progress against crime will have to be made by the people themselves. In Florida this week, the people were fighting a losing battle against crime in Dade County in the Miami area. Jim Sullivan, the county sheriff, had been indicted for failure to enforce gambling laws and permitting his deputies to be bribed. Governor Fuller Warren removed him from office. His successor, Thomas Kelly, was notified this week that he was out of a job. This is the telegram he received from the governor.
I have today issued an order canceling his suspension and reinstating Jimmy Sullivan as sheriff of Dade County effective immediately. Therefore, your appointment is automatically canceled effective immediately. I appreciate very much your services as sheriff during the suspension. Cordially, Fuller Warren, Governor.
The governor of Florida reinstated Jimmy Sullivan as sheriff because the state Supreme Court ruled the indictments against him were invalid. As for Jimmy, he was delighted to have his job back again.
I plan to continue my efforts to make Dade County, Florida, the best sheriff it ever had by a fair and impartial enforcement of all laws. If I can only receive a small amount of assistance and cooperation from the two local newspapers instead of the constant abuse heaped upon me, I can do a much better job for the people of Dade County in my sincere attempts to serve them.
The governor's own Attorney General, Richard Ervin, rose up in indignation over Sullivan's reappointment.
Governor Warren's reinstatement of Jimmy Sullivan to the office of Sheriff of Dade County comes as a distinct shock. Under Sheriff Tom Kelly, crime conditions in Miami and Dade County have greatly improved. Reinstatement of Sullivan, in effect, turns back the clock on the progressive program of clean government in our state.
The local crime commission under Daniel Sullivan, no relation, has done much to clean up Florida, worked closely with the Kefauver Committee. Dan Sullivan reacts.
People take it as a personal affront to them. They feel it's the most disastrous thing that's happened in the state of Florida. And I believe the reason why they feel that way, as represented by their letters, is the fact that Jimmy Sullivan represents to them a condition. It represents a regime or tenure in office when the rackets were running wide open down here and the people are just up in arms about it.
We tried all week to contact Governor Warren for a comment on this matter. He was unavailable. Florida is an interesting case study. One of the first states visited by the Kefauver Committee, it is also the first place where the people have the opportunity to make the temporary gains of the Senate committee permanent. In Washington, another committee was in action. The House Committee on Un-American Activities heard Sterling Hayden, motion picture actor and former husband of Madeline Carroll, admit that he had been a communist.
Well, you tell the committee what led up to your termination of your relationship with the Communist Party.
Thank you very much. That I would like to do. I certainly do not mean to imply that I was dragged into the thing in any way, shape, or manner. I went in myself voluntarily. Certainly it was, I think, the stupidest, most ignorant thing I've ever done, and I've done a good many such things. But I did go into it with a very emotional and very unsound approach. I hadn't been in very long, or I'd say it took me 3 or 4 months to realize the true nature of what I'd done. As I said earlier, it only took me a couple of months to find out that the whole thing is based on their belief that they have the key, that by some occult power, they know what is best for people, and that is the way it's going to be. When I learned this and began to think about it, digest it a bit, I decided one thing, and that was that I would get out.
Bernard M. Baruch was in the news this week. America's elder statesman wrote a letter to Representative Vinson urging universal military training. Mr. Baruch recorded part of it for us.
I think it absolutely indispensable for the defense of our country and for the possible prevention of a third world war that the House enact a bill providing for universal military training. To put off action on universal training would increase the risk of war. It could lose us the priceless time we still have to take the actions which might save the peace. If war is forced upon us, victory will be made quicker and more certain by the enactment of universal training now.
But the House today passed a draft bill that puts universal military training on the shelf until it is studied and until Congress votes approval at some future date. The House draft bill would take men at 18 and a half. The Senate would start drafting 18-year-olds. A joint committee will have to work out this and other details. The House has also told draft boards that they may take into consideration the score of college students on aptitude tests and then decide whether the student should be deferred. In Korea this week, as our ground troops made slow progress and the enemy continued to build up for attack, the air war became a new factor. Thursday saw the biggest jet battles of all time, more than 200 planes involved on both sides. We shot down at least 8 enemy planes, suffered no jet losses ourselves. But 2 of the B-29s were shot down. The Air Force reported 4 other B-29s have been lost in Korea in the past. And General Stratemeyer, the Far Eastern Air Commander, warned that the enemy is getting ready to attack our ground troops, is building new airfields in North Korea, repairing the old one, and still has his privileged sanctuary bases across the Yalu in Manchuria. What you're about to hear is the heartbeat of a hospital, Washington's Walter Reed, and the pulse of those who live within its antiseptic walls. These men know that the fortunes of war are fickle, that commands change, strategy is revised, that yesterday's advance can suddenly become tomorrow's rout. They know, too, that in war, there is always one constant, the casualty. And for them, there is no such thing as a little war. If I were to read the Korean casualty list, one name each second, it would take from now until 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to call off the names. And by then, there would be more to add to the list. The constant, the casualty, continues. This is the sound of a 4-engine transport plane bringing more of the wounded into Washington's bowling field. You've heard that sound before. But how many times have you heard this? That's the sound of a soldier trying out his artificial leg for the first time. No, they're not cutting wood. They're cutting off a soldier's arm at Walter Reed General Hospital. That's not a very pleasant sound. But then war isn't very pleasant either, especially if you're 7,000 miles nearer the battleground than you are in Washington, D.C. Some 8 miles from the capital, 7,000 miles from Korea, is the Army's Walter Reed General Hospital. This red brick Georgian structure, with its imposing white pillars, carefully banked steps, and neatly trimmed landscaping, is one of the finest factories for mending human bodies that we have in this country. If we have failed to find a way to end wars, there is still some small comfort in the knowledge that everything possible is being done here to repair the ravages of war. It makes no difference what the hour is. You can always hear the sound of the stretcher moving through the halls.
Captain, this is a new patient just arrived. All right, put him in bed 16. Are you hungry?
Not much.
I'll get you something to eat as soon as I can.
Some of the men, when they arrive, are hungry. Walter Reed's kitchen feeds 1,300, can prepare 400 different diets.
Cream pureed vegetable soup, 3. Broth, 3. Fat-free broth, 2. Salt-free fat-free broth, 1. Roast beef, 2.
And when mess call comes, those who can head for the cafeteria. Those who can't are fed in their beds. One of the first things you do when you get to Walter Reed is to try to relieve the anxiety at home. Corporal Eugene Anderson, most of his leg muscles shattered by grenade bursts, has a phone brought to his bed.
Sir, operator, I'd like to make a phone call to Philadelphia, please. Evergreen 6, 4146. Corporal Anderson. Corporal Anderson. Eugene. Hello, who's this? Mom. Jean. I'm pretty good now. You know where I'm at? You know where I'm at now? Washington? Yeah. No. last stop.
This is the last stop for Anderson. And for a thin, dark-haired youngster from Maine, whose burning ambition is to be a draftsman, he asked the Red Cross gray lady to come to his bed.
I'd like to send a telegram home to my folks. Dear Mom, I just arrived here in Walter Reed in Washington today. I'm pretty tired from a long trip, but otherwise I'm feeling fine. My legs are coming as good as can be. In a little while I'll be out walking again, doing everything I used to do.